I'm gonna tell you something. I'm Star-Lord. I formed the Guardians. Met a girl, fell in love. That girl died, but then she came back. Came back a total dick.
Oh, please. He left out some important information, but that is the gist of it.
My sacred mission
is to create the perfect society.
He didn't want to make things perfect. He just hated things the way they are.
I want you all to know that I'm grateful to fight beside my friends.
Incinerate them.
We were always searching for a family.
Until we found each other.
Are you ready for one last ride?
Fly away together
into the forever and beautiful sky.
Hello and welcome to the Movie Robcast. I'm your host Rob Daniel, and as always I am joined by my learned and splendid co-host Mr. Rob Wallace.
We are Rob.
Well, we are Rob, but some of us are more Rob than others, because 50% of the podcast has seen the film that we'll be reviewing this week, and 50% hasn't. So we'll be asking questions. I have to admit, I have not seen Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, so scheduling issues and just having other things to do meant that I didn't get time to watch this one, but thought, well, we have to cover it. Rob has seen it, and to be completely honest, I'm not a huge fan of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, so it will be interesting to hear what Rob has to say about it. But you did go and see it.
I have seen Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Yes. A film that has opened in the US to $114 million, and I think it's done $282 million around the world this weekend, so we're recording this on Sunday night, the 7th of May. And yeah, that 114 is quite surprising, because I think a lot of people had this down to be the big film of the summer. Volume 2 opened to 146 million. So Volume 1 was, I think, 94 million, but it was the first one, and I think took a lot of people by surprise and had great word of mouth. But Volume 2 opened to 146 million in the States, and eventually did about 860 million worldwide. This has opened to 114 million. I think that might be a disappointment. I think the Disney were probably hoping, and Marvel were probably hoping, that this would open to at least the equal of Volume 2.
I mean, it's been almost 5 years since Volume 2.
It's been 6 years. It came out in 2017.
Yeah, and it's been, you know, the equivalent time between that and the previous one, between the first Guardians of the Galaxy film.
Yes, that was 2014, I think. So it was...
Okay, so actually a bigger gap. I've completely... Yeah, that's my that's faulty memory coming to effect.
But I think that's also something to do with, like, COVID basically blew out films for at least 18 months. We would have got this film earlier if it wasn't for COVID.
Yeah, we got
this
in 2020?
I would imagine so, yeah. I think
2021.
I think they would have gone for something like that. It would have, because it seems a long time ago since, like, we saw Volume 2.
Everyone is already almost more associated with other things. Like, you know, James Gunn was fired and rehired and is now kind of head honcho at DC.
Mm.
And he did The Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
And Chris Pratt, you know, Mario most recently, but he's kind of gone off and had his own journey. And Dave Bautista, you know, everybody's kind of involved in doing other things.
They are, but I do think that the Guardians films have a lot of goodwill towards them.
I think that's going back to, and I like Volume 2, but I think that's going back to the first one, how the first one kind of at least was seen as skewing the Marvel formula.
It was, but that's the thing, is that when I say that I had scheduling issues, I have to admit I did not make an effort to work around my scheduling issues to see this movie, because I'm just not a fan of the Guardians films. If this had been Oppenheimer, I would have seen it.
Oppenheimer or Barbie?
Or Barbie, yeah. I would have seen the movie. I've always found the Guardians films to be empty, and for all of the talk of, like, the first one did something different, it's like, no, it didn't. It did exactly the same thing, right down to having a fight in the sky ending and a pretty drab visual style, and everyone said, oh, it's Marvel doing something different. And it's like, no, this is the same. It's just as flavourless. And it also had a really annoying thing in it that it seems quite small, but I think totally sums up everything wrong with the movie. Is it Drax? Is he the Dave Bautista character?
Yes.
Yeah. And he has no sense of irony, or he takes everything literally. But at one point, I think he calls Nebula, is the Karen Gillan character.
Yeah.
I think he calls her or Gamora, the Zoe Saldana character, a whore. And it's like, okay, so you think that she has sex for money then? No, you don't. But you just put that in there because you're trying to be edgy. But you've completely broken the character.
I do not remember that, in all fairness. So it
seemed out of place, and also seemed totally wrong for the character, because it's like, well, he has to literally believe that she's
a prostitute,
a sex worker. Yeah. Then, yeah. It's like, no, but he doesn't. But that's the thing. I just don't think these films work. And to be completely honest, I'll get my moan out of the way, and then you could say, what do you think of the film? Because that's going to be the most interesting thing. I'll be quick, I promise. I don't like James Gunn either in terms of his films. I'm sure he's a very, very nice guy. I find his films one note and flavourless and kind of mean-spirited. Super, the anti-superhero film he did with Rainn Wilson, actually I did really like. I thought that was very good. That was the one that really kind of fit his worldview. Everything else, particularly when you try and make that into like a mainstream film, it just falls flat for me. And Guardians 2 was just fucking boring. I was so bored by that movie. And it was 15 minutes shorter than Volume 3, so how can you waste Kurt Russell like that? But anyway. So that's where I was going from. So probably best I haven't seen the film. Although I did read the beginning of the plot on Wikipedia, and it actually sounded quite interesting. So I can't wait to see it when it comes onto Disney Plus, which is exactly how I'm going to watch it.
Like you're going to watch Ant-Man Quantumania when it comes on Disney Plus.
Yes, indeed.
I would join you to rewatch stuff, because I usually sit in the cinema, but I would join you for a rewatch on Disney Plus, and we'll get a pizza and we'll pop it on.
Well, let's do that for Ant-Man then. Because I liked Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I did not like Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, I really liked...
Like everyone involved, I like Lawrence Fishburne. I like Walton Goggins. I like...
I like the sense of adventure that it had, and just the sense of fun. And also, of course, that came out the same year as Infinity War. And I think I spent about 6 months annoying you saying Ant-Man and the Wasp is a much more successful movie than Infinity War. A film that doesn't seem to understand the contract of, like, viewer and character. Like, everyone talking about the emotional gut punch of the ending of Infinity War. It's like, we know they're going to come back in the next one. There are no stakes to this because we know they're going to come back. So that's where I am with Marvel right now. It's like, I kind of assume that I'm going to watch it on Disney Plus, if at all, because I just never got around to watching The Eternals. I just can't be asked to watch a film that even the MCU seems to be just put into one side a little bit.
Oh yeah, there's like a massive world-breaking thing they introduce in that film that they just haven't done anything with since then.
Right, okay, that is brilliant. Well, would you like to give us the synopsis for Guardians?
Sure, I will get the synopsis for the Guardians and possibly read it out in some sort of COD heroic voice. I will open up the IMDb synopsis and then we'll see how that is. Still reeling from the loss of Gamora. Did this use my fruity theatre actor voice?
It is.
Peter Quill rallies his team to defend the universe and one of their own. A mission that could mean the end of the Guardians, if not successful.
Okay, so... that was lots of build-up. What did you think of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3? And if you can hear any banging in the background, that's my neighbours. We are recording in my flat this time.
I enjoyed it. It's 150 minutes, and it could have been 10, 15, 20 minutes shorter. I still really enjoyed it. And in all fairness, I like the Guardians films. It has the humour, it has the snark, but it also has the silliness and the sincerity, and it makes a really good case on why DC want James Gunn as much as they do.
Okay.
Because they want somebody who has, like, you know, even, like, you know, if you could argue it's not entirely successful, has a grasp on tone. who's not Zack Snyder being like, everything is weighted exactly the same. The end of the universe is exactly the same as a man walking across a room.
And everything's as grim as
exactly,
fuck.
Everything's... Whereas, like, at least in, like, everybody, you know, everyone who's seen the trailer, Drax throwing the dodgeball to the little girl and just beating her in the face. It's, yeah. like, good comedy moment.
It made me laugh in the trailer. Yeah.
And there's much more dramatic stuff in the film. And I think everybody's good in their roles. Chris Pratt, not a personally beloved figure. He's good. He's good as Star-Lord. He's good as Peter Quill. And it is a film where there are actually genuine dramatic stakes and characters that you care about. I mean, like, the kind of the shift into this is the main narrative focus is Rocket Raccoon, as voiced by Bradley Cooper.
Mm.
And I think it works. I think it largely, again, it's overlong, but there is a serious level of commitment in this film that I admire. And actually, the first 10 minutes of it, so, is almost like a minimal dialogue tracking shot, just following the Guardians moving around nowhere, which is, you know, the giant head space, literally head space. And looking at the characters and seeing where they are at, and like there's
so what's that again? The and nowhere
the kind of giant head that's floating in space. That's the kind of galactic paw. I think it's in the first film. It's certainly in the second film.
Oh right.
That's kind of become Guardians of the Galaxy HQ.
Right. Okay.
There is a lot of back and forth in the film. There's too much plot, but the actual story is good. There's a bit too much of like, okay, we need to get this character here in order for us to be able to do this, but. Ultimately, and I think actually it's certainly got one of the most successful villains that they've had in a while, which is Chukwudi Iwuji as the High Evolutionary, who's the kind of person who's responsible for a rocket.
Well, in terms of like the reason why he can talk.
Yeah, exactly. Like he kind of was in charge of the experiment that created Rocket.
Yeah, right.
And here's this guy who's, you know, got a god complex and wants to, you know, create a perfect world.
Right.
But he's also like a fanatical narcissist. And you know, Chukwudi Iwuji, who is in Peacemaker.
Okay.
And has worked with James Gunn before, and you know, he's great in Peacemaker. He's got some great stuff in Peacemaker. But James Gunn, obviously, and there's a big kind of like island, a Dr. Moreau element to it. I think you'd probably quite like it.
The thing is, one of the things right now with Marvel films that is beginning to, I think, great is that as we're getting into multiverses in general.
There's none of that.
Right, because I mean, even to give a slight spoiler for the last Thor film. A major character dies, but then is revealed not to, well, for there to be an afterlife. But within this, so there are actual stakes in this, and
yeah.
And that if you get emotionally invested, that is rewarded and it isn't immediately undercut
the multiverse isn't referenced.
Okay. Oh, okay, right. So what are the other things that you liked about it?
I think there are some genuinely funny moments in it. The emotional stuff does actually hit, especially the focus on Rocket, I think actually works. And the fact that it does kind of play the fact that you've known these characters for a decade. Like, you know, and they've appeared, you know, in other things throughout the MCU. And the fact this is the end. I mean, because James Gunn certainly really isn't, Chancellor isn't coming back to Marvel.
I read in some interviews, yeah, that he was kind of umming and ahhing up until last year about if there'd be another Guardians film. And he said, well, if the script was okay and da-da-da. But now it's like, he said, no, this is the final one he's done. Zoe Saldana actually said that she is also done with Gamora.
There's also like and it's a big film. And I like the fact they've finally got Adam Warlock in the MCU.
Who's he?
He's played by Will Poulter.
Right.
And he's essentially an incredibly powerful gold being, who in the context of the actual the comics, basically incredibly powerful.
Is he part of like another story?
In the context of the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, he's relating to the High Evolutionary. Actually, as he is in the original comics.
Okay, so there wasn't like an Adam Warlock comic. He was a character within another comic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay, right. I've never heard of him.
Elizabeth Debicki's in it. She's underused.
Oh, brilliant. She was in Volume 2, wasn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So she's playing the same character?
Yeah, she's playing the same character.
And he's underused again?
Yeah, and he's underused again.
That's a shame.
Maria Bakalova. Most people know from the second Borat film. And as she did, I think, in the Christmas special, she plays Cosmo, who's the kind of the psychic dog, who's basically meant to be Latka, the first dog launched into space by the Soviet Union, who, you know, was basically, as she says in the film, kind of shot up into space and left to die.
Yes. And I think the real Latka did not return with the voice of Maria Bakalova.
No, the real Latka lived. I choose to believe this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, she went to live on an interstellar farm.
Exactly, yeah. can I go and see her? No.
No, you can't, ever. The last time we saw Zoe Saldana in a film was Avatar 2. and she had nothing to do.
This is better than Avatar 2.
Okay, so she has something to do.
Yes, she's definitely supporting because essentially, and I think this is the film's credit, it can't really do much with the her and Peter Quill, Star-Lord romance angle because she's not the same person.
Yeah, because I was reading something about that and I thought, did she die in Volume 2 then?
But she died in Avengers. She got thrown off for the cliff by Thanos.
Yes, that's right. And that was in Infinity War, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he sacrificed her to get the stone. Yeah. And he had to sacrifice something that you love. That's right. But she was in Endgame, wasn't she?
Yes.
But come back as a different person. Like there's
a bunch of lampshading. There's one scene where basically, transitionary scene, where essentially Peter Quill lays out everything that's happened so far, including being slightly sarky about the stuff that clearly wasn't written by James Gunn that he's not entirely happy with.
Including some of the things.
It's like, you know, and then I punched Thanos in the face and nearly ended half the universe, which James Gunn clearly isn't happy with.
Right.
Which actually, in the context of the scene, is actually like this, that kind of works.
Well, that's the thing. It would be interesting to see what the relationship was like between James Gunn and the Marvel execs, because, of course,
they fired him.
They fired him, and it's only because the cast said, well, we're not doing it then, that he was hired back. And you have to think, I mean, I know that everyone here is being very, very professional and not saying anything about that on the press junkets, but you have to think there's a certain amount of, he would be entitled to have a fuck you attitude on set, saying, I gave you two hits and then you fired me because of tweets that things I said 13 years ago or something.
To give you an idea of the amount of influence that apparently James Gunn had, this is definitely James Gunn's film in terms of, it seems to be the film that he wanted to make. Nathan Fillion is in this film a lot.
Right.
Which is a suggestion that James Gunn had... Not that Nathan Fillion doesn't deserve to be in the film of his own merits, but he's in the film to an extent that you're like, James Gunn definitely just like, fuck it, I want to give Nathan a role.
Right, okay. So are there any other things that you liked about it before we get to spoilers?
Oh, there was a moment where I literally had a spit take. I literally did a spit take.
Oh, okay.
Because I took a sip of drink and there's a moment where, and this isn't a big spoiler, the sequence where they do kind of go to that planet, which looks very 1960s kind of suburbs.
Yeah. Which is in the trailer. Yeah,
which is in the trailer.
Yeah.
There's a moment where they talk about, like, you know, there's a character and they end up in this suburban home and they talk about borrowing the dad's car and he kind of just goes, because he's clearly not happy with the idea because he knows his car's going to get fucked up. And for some reason...
They're
talking about, like, okay, we need to borrow the dad's car. We need to borrow your car and go and do this.
The Guardians are.
Yeah, the Guardians, the guns are. Like, right, we need to borrow this guy. Like, and he looks like a rabbit. He's the dad of, like, the little girl that gets beamed in the face of the ball. And the,
right.
And he just does this kind of, like... thing that for some reason I just taken a mouthful of drink absolutely just made me spit take right there in the cinema because it's just so normal and so resigned against the heightened pitch of everything else.
Okay.
Like imagine like, you know, you live on a planet, you're like, you know, you live in this world and it's sci-fi and these guys have just turned up and they're like clearly fucking aliens and they want to go and talk to the guys running the planet and then all of a sudden they're like, you need to borrow your car. And you don't really speak their language. And all of a sudden, you just get that and you're just like...
right, okay. Like, I'll look out for that,
but I... But it, like, absolutely made me, like... Luckily, it wasn't in the vicinity of anyone else sitting near me, but literally just made me sprayed drink out of my mouth.
Yeah, I've never done that in a cinema.
Because I think it was just because it was so, like... low-key, I think it was, because it was so, like, wonderfully understated in the context of this big blockbuster that it's just giving a moment for this guy who's just very, he looks like a rabbit, but he's very normal. He's just a 1960s suburban dad.
Yes.
Who's just having to give up his car to these fucking guys.
Okay, right.
I totally wasn't prepared for it, because again, I just went... and I think that's possibly the first time I've ever done a spit take. I've ever done like a proper spit take.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything in a Guardians film that's made me laugh. I saw Guardians 1 at the IMAX and it had a couple of good moments in it. It had Starman playing and there's a point when their little spaceship is in this huge vastness of space and Starman's playing by David Bowie. And on the IMAX screen, it's like, that is wonderful. That is a wonderful moment. All right, anything before we get into spoilers?
It's definitely the best Marvel film since Endgame.
Hmm. So better than Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
I like Doctor Strange in Multiverse of Madness. I don't like it as much as you, I don't think.
No, you don't, because it's great.
That's a film, again, without massive stakes, because you've got everything everywhere all at once, which is kind of a deconstruction, a thematic, philosophical exploration of the idea of the multiverse as being an essentially nihilistic thing.
Mm.
Because the multiverse, as far as it exists in Marvel, is just a story-generating tool. It just allows them to tell more stories. But there's no real existential component to it, because the Marvel films just aren't kitted to deal with that.
Yeah.
Whereas Everything Everywhere All at Once is like, okay, let's look at the idea of the multiverse from an existential perspective in terms of if everything exists, then actually nothing matters. Your choice doesn't matter.
Yeah. And the beauty of that film is that it says, actually, that is the wrong way to look at this. Yeah, I completely agree with that. So would you say The Guardians Volume 3 is better than, say, Homecoming or Far From Home, the Spider-Man movies?
I like Far From Home, but I like Far From Home mostly because of the fan service. I mean, Homecoming's an earlier. Homecoming is...
Well, that was the first film after Endgame.
Sorry. I like it better than Far From Home. I don't know if I necessarily like it better than... I like No Way Home.
I'm thinking of Far From Home and... What was the...
And No Way Home.
Sorry, yes, I wasn't...
I like No Way Home because of the fan service, and because I think a lot of it lands and a lot of it is very sincere.
Yeah.
And obviously, our first ever film discussion was about an Andrew Garfield, our first ever film chat.
Yeah.
The first time we ever met was discussing an Andrew Garfield Spider-Man film.
10 years next year, is it?
Yeah, 10 years next year.
Yeah, Rob came for a job interview and it got onto the subject of The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And that was not the only reason why you got the job, but it was a good discussion. And for that reason, we do need to do an episode on The Amazing Spider-Man 2 at some point. Which also means we'll need to watch The Amazing Spider-Man as well, a film that I found very, very dull. Although The Amazing Spider-Man 2, I thought, had its moments, although it had that ruinous ending.
Well, all of a sudden it turns into Twilight. It's got the 360-degree time passage of time pan.
Well, just the cruelty of the ending, just the callousness of the writing. I couldn't believe what I was watching. Anyway, well, that's for another podcast. So you would say that this is equal to... No Way Home or...
Yeah. I think this is doing something very different from No Way Home. Emotionally, a lot of it landed for me.
Mm. Okay, so anything else before we get to spoilers?
No, just to say that, like, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, James Gunn's, and possibly the Guardians' last hurrah in the MCU. The 32nd film in the MCU?
Is it?
Yeah.
Jesus. I mean, well done for productivity, guys.
I would put it definitely in the top 10 films in the MCU. There's a case to be made, maybe not quite, but I'd put it more towards the top 5 than the top 10.
Wow.
Which is, you know, again, for 32 films, pretty impressive going. It's probably, in terms of you know, sheer emotionality, probably my favourite Guardians film.
Right, okay.
And
because it has an emotion in it.
Yeah.
I'm being snarky. Because... I'm channeling the Guardians movies.
Yeah, exactly. A snark will get you a long way.
It'll get you to well over $1 billion at the box office. Speaking of which, the Super Mario Brothers film has done $1.15 million at the worldwide box office.
$1.5 billion.
I say million.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a bit more than that. Yeah, $1.15 billion at the worldwide box office.
Mamma mia.
No one saw that coming.
That's a spicy meatball.
That's a spicy box office.
They made $1 billion. We're allowed to do that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You're part Italian, right?
My great-grandmother came from southern Italy, so that's absolutely fine.
And he countersigned mine doing that, and I don't have...
Yeah, I completely approve of that, by the way. That's absolutely fine. So
I think I'm covered for English, England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. I think anything within the Great Britain, I'm covered to do the accent for.
So, old... What's his name? Chris Pratt's having a pretty good... April, May time, isn't he? With his, this is obviously number one at the US box office, and I would imagine around the world, even though I still think that that box office is quite low. I think they were probably hoping for 200 million, because this is the final one. The Guardians are very, very popular.
I think people just realise that I can watch it at home.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see when it comes onto Disney Plus to watch for free. Okay, well, if you haven't seen... Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 and you're not me, then please stop listening now because we're going to spoilers. So thank you very much for listening and please continue listening after you've seen the movie. If you have seen the film, then feel free to stick around. We're going to play a bit of the trailer now. Once that's over, you'll be in the spoiler section and we'll continue talking about the film. Don't say something.
I was about to say, we could use a clip from, because they do reuse in the mid-credit sequence, Redbone's Come and Get Your Love.
Okay.
No. Come and get your love.
Okay.
Come and get your love, come and get your love, come and get your love now. It's in the original film. It was the big... It's the one where he's kind of going through and they're doing the Indiana Jones sequence and he's going through and he's getting the relic and he's doing the...
Oh, right, yes. At the very beginning of the film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then the title comes up. Yeah, right, then we'll play that. So,
go and get your love.
Yeah, we went and got the love, and now we're in the spoiler section with all the love. There was a shot in this film. The friend of the podcast, Adrian Zach, said he was very surprised it got into A12A. And it's like, well, is it a case of like Spielberg in the 80s would have shots in films in a PG that you often wouldn't get in an 18? The MCU can get away with a bit more? Do you know what shot he might be talking about?
Possibly something involving Rocket and his fellow experiments. Because they are, some of them, fairly nightmarish.
Well, it's a particular shot where something violent happens.
Oh, I mean, like, one of them, like, they do get violently killed around Rocket.
There's a shot in the film where a character has their face ripped off.
Oh, yeah, oh, okay. Yeah, okay, that's when the High Evolutionary is killed at the end of the film.
Right.
And Rocket's already, you've seen him flashback, absolutely torn his face. And then you see him in the present and he's kind of... normal looking, and then they do peel that off and have him look fairly Harvey Dent Two-Face in Dark Knight in terms of, yeah, like, you know, absolutely. And yeah, it is fairly horrific.
Okay,
but I guess in the context of the film it's like, okay, that's fine, that's probably not the thing that's going to give kids nightmares.
Okay, so what are the spoilers in this film? That,
well, the fact that Adam Warlock, as played by Will Poulter, is, you know, this golden god, this superpowered being who is a complete dummy. The idea that essentially he's a child in the body of a god. A bit like Shazam, but more like he's just an idiot.
Okay. And is that a spoiler, because we're not supposed to think that until a certain point
You get that reasonably early on. Okay. But like his first, like, you know, he almost kills Rocket. Like, essentially he turns up and he's meant to take the Rocket back to the High Evolutionary and the Rocket is almost killed. But then you realise, like, oh no, he's just an idiot. Like, he has no idea what's going on.
Right.
And it's like Will Poulter playing just oblivious, and Will Poulter being in a basic shape. He just did a series on ITV called Why Didn't They Ask Evans, which is an adaptation of the Agatha Christie novel by Hugh Laurie.
Huh.
And just seeing him in early... I've only watched the first episode, but you see him in that and you're like, you are in phenomenal shape. Like, you are just...
you're in Marvel shape.
Exactly, like you are in... Actually, in all fairness, he did talk about it recently, where it's like, you can't do this in real life. You can't do this without, like... Marvel Disney resources behind you. You can't do this from both a physical and from like a mental health perspective in terms of getting to that movie ready
physique.
Yeah,
right, okay, because you're working out 6 hours a day and eating 16 micro meals,
yeah,
very, very carefully balanced to give you just enough energy, but you're constantly burning fat,
yeah,
because of the way that you're living and your exercise and your diet regime. Yeah, the only thing you can do is presumably learn your lines. And
it's interesting because, you know, Chris Pratt was obviously got slightly heavier in some of the more recent Marvel films because I guess it wasn't like a big stipulation. Basically wasn't doing any shirtless scenes. He wasn't being positioned in that way.
Yeah.
And in this one, he's clearly got massively into, like, you know, I don't think he has any shirtless, I can't remember any shirtless scenes in it, but he's clearly got massively into shape again for it.
Well, they told him he didn't need to get into shape for the first one. They said, you can be your regular shape. That actually fits the character quite well. And he said, no, he wanted to get into shape. So he was the reason why, yeah, he's so ripped in the first movie. And is Will Poulter, is he a bit like Mantis then? Does he start off as one thing and then ultimately join the Guardians,
yes,
and
help, yeah, defend? Yeah, right towards the end. Right.
So it's very similar to Volume 2 then.
In that regard. I mean, like, yeah, Mantis, they do a bit more with her.
In Volume 2, it was Mantis, who was Ego's little servant.
Yes.
Who then teams up with Drax and helps save the day. Okay. If it ain't broke, then why ever think about changing it?
But there's some good... Again, it's 2.5 hours long. It could be 15, 20 minutes shorter.
Because it's 2 minutes longer than 2001. And that goes from the dawn of man to the next evolutionary step in humankind.
But is it funny?
Well, Hal could be quite funny sometimes. Just what do you think you're doing, Dave?
I'm afraid I can't do that, Dave.
I'm afraid I can't do that, Dave. But this is 2 minutes longer than that, 2001. So that's quite long. So what are the big plot events or the big reveals in this film and also that could influence the next film or so or something?
This is there's very little setup here in terms of another Guardians film.
Or just in any film.
No, they're kind of treating this as like, you know, they kind of introduce Adam Warlock, and because Adam Warlock's so powerful, is that the idea is that he might pop up in a future MCU film. A future MCU film. This is kind of treated like, it's not apocalyptic, but it's kind of treated like the end of the line for these characters.
Okay, so what were the kind of big scenes in the film that really worked for you?
A lot of them did involve Rocket, and in terms of Rocket's evolution, they got flashbacks to him in the High Evolutionary and how he became the kind of the being that he is. And on one hand, you go, oh, James Gunn, same tone. On the other hand, I think it's well-judged and well-weighted enough that there weren't scenes that just suddenly pop up and I felt like that hasn't been earned. There's a great scene where they have to break into the kind of HQ to get this code to resuscitate Rocket, because Rocket's essentially, they can't even use the standard Medipack stuff on him because he's proprietary technology.
Oh, he has a kill switch in him.
Yeah, he's kind of got a kill switch in him.
Yeah.
And they have to break into the HQ. And there's a great sequence where they're basically being pinned down by the local security staff as led by Nathan Fillion.
Right.
Who's playing a real dick. And
is he playing himself, or is he playing a human, or is he playing a creature?
He's playing a human.
Right.
And yeah, like, you know, it's one of those things like, oh, this wasn't a big stretch for you, Nathan, wasn't it? But, you know, this is a decent salary. And I don't know, maybe the rookie's not going that well. But
he's still got his castle money.
Yeah, like, I don't wake up in the middle of the night worried about Nathan Fillion. It's not.
Although I do sometimes wake up happy that he's part of the world, because he makes me smile when I think about him.
He needs to do something with Bruce Campbell, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He does need to do something. Oh my God, imagine that. Just do a film together, guys. That would be so brilliant.
Like, just them being sarky against each other.
Yeah, they need to play brothers. They need to play brothers. Oh my God, that'd be so nice. Okay, so that's a good sequence. And in terms of the filmmaking, because I have to admit, those shots at the beginning of the trailer when the big spaceship lands in the suburbs, and maybe it's supposed to look that drab because it turns out that all the residents are animals that can speak.
Yeah.
And are anthropomorphic. No,
there's some really good colourful sequences.
It's so boring.
When they're invading the kind of, when they're touching down on the kind of enemy base where they've got to go and infiltrate, and they're all wearing different primary coloured suits and they're touching down and they've got to infiltrate. There's some really nice little touches, like the fact that the Mantis character, played by Pom Klentieff, keeps wiping out. Not in like a way that like she wipes out and they're playing it for a big comedy moment. She's just not as good as landing and like not as good as like jumping and landing and doing the whole kind of moving in a spacesuit. Like she just keeps on kind of doing like a flip and all this stuff that's like actually played really quite subtly. And it's clearly just a thing where James Gunn has said to her, like, so like, we're not making a thing of it, but your character is just going to be really ungainly in these moments. And every time you put on a spacesuit and every time you've got to go out there and do this, you're going to be a little bit less good than everyone else.
Yeah, fine. Okay. I'm actually quite happy that I'm not going to see this one at the cinema because, I don't know, all this stuff sounds a bit like, because there's that bit in Black Widow when the Florence Pugh character says, why do you always do that landing? That pose when you land and make a big thing of the landing there. And it's like, okay.
It's just better than Black Widow.
Oh, God, yeah.
It is also longer than Black Widow, so...
It's what, sorry?
It's also longer than Black Widow.
Yeah, but not by much, because Black Widow was about 2 hours 18 or something, and it was just so... Oh, that film was so
God, that wasn't a 90-minute movie?
No.
Oh, my God.
I fell asleep in that film. In a lunchtime screening, I had a long blink where it was like, it's so boring. And the only reason that I talk about the visuals is because... There's the Patrick Willems video essay that I think was the one that really got him to like a wide audience, where he talks about like why do Marvel films look a bit like concrete, and he talks about the fact they have no true black scale in there. It's all quite grey because, of course, everyone shoots in log, so you can bring anything out but keep it all visually pretty similar. It all looks a little bit mid-range. And he goes through a scene in Guardians Volume 1 and changes it to bring up the colour a bit. And it immediately looks much more interesting. And it's like, you could do that with these films. These films don't have to look this way. And in Civil War, when they have that massive fight between the two factions of the heroes, It's on an overcast day with grey sky. It's just like, what a drab-looking action scene this is. So, yeah, I always kind of think they try to make the Guardians films look colourful, but there's always something about them that just fits very neatly into the MCU overall. I can say for parts one and two, not for this one because I haven't seen it yet, but I will watch it and probably have to watch it with you because I'll turn it off if I watch it alone. I don't know. So, I mean...
We'll watch it on that couch, whether or not it's here in this room at this point. And we'll have a pizza and some beer and we'll watch Guardians.
Okay, then. Is there anything else to say about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3?
I enjoyed it. And I laughed. I was actually moved by some points in it. It's 2.5 hours long. It doesn't need to be 2.5 hours long, but... And it's one of those things where you don't walk away from it feeling that any of the characters have been hugely shortchanged.
Okay.
And which I appreciate. It's like, okay, you've made a long film. You've made a long film because you don't want people, like, you know, Gamora had nothing to do. Nebula had nothing to do. It's like you want everyone, like, even if they don't have loads to do, you want them to feel like they serve a purpose and they actually get a bit of payoff and a bit of time and a bit of...
So do the characters get an ending? Does Drax go off with Mantis or something?
Some of them go off. It's not like a definitive ending for all of the characters. There is a sense that they could do another iteration of Guardians of the Galaxy with some of the same cast.
Right, okay. Because apparently after the end credits, there is a message that a character is going to return.
Yeah, like Star-Lord will return.
Right, okay. Because Chris Pratt isn't going to return. No. This is, well, obviously there'll be a Super Mario Brothers 2, but this is the only kind of franchise it's got.
Jurassic.
I'll do another one of those, though. I mean, that did make a billion, so they might do one more. Yeah, indeed, yeah. Do you remember when he was going to be Indiana Jones? A different time.
And then he just went, oh no, we can still get Harrison Ford to do that.
Yeah, but to go back to Jurassic, just because you could do it doesn't mean to say that you should, but we'll see.
Is that the moral of the Jurassic? I thought it's we could make dinosaurs, whoopee.
If you can do something, just don't even think about the consequences, just go ahead and do it. But we will obviously go and see the indie film. Again, if this was indie, I would have made time to see it. Yes, so, all right then. So anything else to say about Guardians?
It's good. Like, you know.
It made me spit take. I am very much looking forward to seeing that shot now.
It's such an understated moment that almost if you're prepped for it, you almost won't get anything out of it. I think
that's what's happened to me. I'm telling you, I'll be like, yeah, fine. No, it was the surprise of it. Right then. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much.
And if people want to follow you on the internet, where can they do that?
If you're looking for following me online, you could do so on Twitter at Robin M. Wallace. And also for my writing, such as it is, out of all the film sites, www.allthefilmsites.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast and you'd like to hear Mr. Daniel and I talk about the 1986 classic Highlander, then, yeah, we have a whole other pod. It's called Another Time McCloud. And we talk a lot about Highlander and a lot about other stuff. So, you know, if you like 80s cinema, if you like cinema in general, if you just want to hear us talk about some more about some films, then please, yeah, again, it's called Another Time McCloud. You can listen to it wherever you're listening to this. You can also follow that on Twitter at McCloud Time and drop us a Highlander-themed email. We're currently on hiatus, but it'd be great to hear from you at whowantstopodforever@gmail.com.
Thank you very much. And yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at @rob_a_daniel. You can find me on Instagram at robdan75. If you want to read my stuff, it is at electric-shadows.com. And if you want to see what I've been watching, then you can go to Letterboxd. I'm letterboxd.com/robdan. I've seen 54 films this year, which is not a huge amount.
I think I'm approaching 200.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was thinking about you and that marathon you did in January.
I'm aiming for 365 this year. I was going to aim for 500, but I'm like, you know what, I'm scaling back because I actually want to enjoy watching them.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like, if you can average a film a day, then that's still pretty good going. And if you've liked this, then please rate and or review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. It's always much appreciated. It helps us with the algorithms and everyone likes leaving a star rating. Well, thank you very much again, Rob.
Well, thank you very much.
And thank you very much for listening. And we will be coming at you again with some movie chat very, very soon.
Come and get your love. Come and get your love. Come and get your love now. Come on, get your higher. Come on, take it up.
I'll just play the song.
Come and get your love. Come and get your love. Come and get your love now. Come and get your love.